Yeah, she's giving her little presentation on hybristophilia, which is your attraction to murder. And here I am like, doesn't seem like she's done a lick of original research. Like, what authority does she have giving this lecture?
It did seem like she was reading it off of eBay. Absolutely. But she is eSlay, yes. Or reading it off of Wikipedia, or whatever it's called in Riverpedia, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Pals and gals, and welcome to another episode of XOXO Riverdale. I'm Louis Perlman.
I'm Kate Batter.
And this is your favorite Riverdale fan podcast, where we talk all about Riverdale and genuinely love Riverdale and everything about Riverdale and never have any criticism about Riverdale.
Not at all.
Not at all. This time we are covering the episode American Psychos. Get ready for that. We're doing this over Zoom, and Kate has already rolled her eyes once. If I had a nickel for every time Kate rolled her eyes while we do this podcast, let me tell you guys. And if you like what you're hearing, you can please subscribe to us. That's the best thing you can do on your podcatcher if you want to support the show, and follow us on social media and interact with us. So before we get into American Psycho, let's get into some Riverdale fan news. Kate, what is going on?
Just some fun Instagram stuff. I don't know how to say this other than Cole's fat ass.
Well, that is a
Photoshop.
That's a Photoshop. Cole Sprouse this week posted for the world to see a very cheeky photo. Do you see what I did there?
Oh, I do.
Of him in a mirror with his butt. And his butt's clearly been Photoshopped to look gigantic. And Kate and I this week were having some big discussions about how long it would take to get taken down.
And it's still up.
But it's still up, yeah, which is kind of a surprise. And a live tweeter, Jenna, and I also had some conversations about that too, where we were like, how long is this going to take to get taken down? And I know butt really straddles a line with Instagram, and altered butt straddles a line with Instagram, but I thought I saw some junk in there as well. But in retrospect, maybe that was just wishful thinking on my part, and maybe it was just like a shadow or something, and that's why Instagram didn't take it down.
I think it could be, but it also could so easily be argued shadow that like Instagram just doesn't want to fuck with a verified account.
Yeah, maybe that's wise. Instagram's like, whatever, we're not going to get into this with this guy.
Yeah, this isn't female nipples. We'll take our time.
Exactly, this isn't female nipples, so we don't care. Anyway, yeah, so it was kind of a funny thing to happen this week. And then also, like, if you mentally unphotoshop Cole Sprouse's butt, which was sort of something that could be done with that photo, he has a very cute little butt. So, good for him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a nice little tush. Yeah, four star tush.
Yeah. Not quite five, but he's there.
Yeah, but he's pretty close. Yeah, he's pretty close. He's pretty close to a five star tush. I know that because it's Cole Sprouse, I'm gonna say I'm sure we could get into how this is some sort of metatextual commentary on fame itself through him doing that. But you know what? I'm not actually that interested in having that conversation.
No, you know what I hope? I hope he had fun with the filter and thinks it's great that it's up. Like, I hope that it's nothing.
Yeah, I hope it brought him some happiness.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Also, there were some other verified accounts that were like other actor folk who wrote in the comments. I do think this is worth talking about a little bit. Who wrote in the comments, oh no, this photo again, which makes me think that he's been sending this to people for a while, and now he's, like, brought it out to the world.
Oh, man.
And that's kind of funny.
Would love for that to be the truth.
Yeah, like, part of me feels like maybe this is something he was doing to troll his friends, and then he just decided to kind of troll the world. And that's pretty funny.
This photo has been in my favorites for a very long time, so I'm glad you finally posted before I did.
Yes. Yes. Who wrote that?
I don't fucking know who this person is. Mark Indelicato.
Okay.
He's on Hacks.
Oh, he's an actor from Hacks. Okay, cool.
Zelda Williams, and just as it left my consciousness, it's back again.
Yes, Zelda Williams. So he's apparently texted it to Zelda Williams. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Zelda Williams, who is Robin Williams' like super cool daughter, who's very cool. Yeah. Big fan.
The rest of the celebrities are just like nice ass.
Yeah. So that's one piece of fan news. And there is a pretty fun meme this week that we just want to.
Yeah. Let me, if I can remember it. So for people who are not in the know on this, American Girl doll memes have hit like big on Instagram. And I know like recently there was like a bunch of like feuding in the community because like one American Girl Instagram account went like super Christian and was like against Pride Month. That's just some more context because I'm loving American Girl meme drama.
Yeah, sure.
Everyone running it is like into their
30s. Of course. None of them really can call themselves American girls by this point.
No. But all of us had them. And there are definitely some of these memes that are about dolls that came about after my time.
Sure.
But like the good chunk of them are about very specifically dolls that I did in fact own.
Of course. But
several accounts do things that are like, we need an American Girl doll who, and then like any American Girl doll who was on the grassy knoll, or I need an American Girl doll who started the Great Molasses Flood.
Mm-hmm.
Just like things like that. And there was one this week that's, we need an American Girl doll that is a jingle jangle dealer.
Yeah, that's very funny.
And there were no other references to Riverdale. Just truly out of nowhere. I don't know. It seems like this account that I found it on is not even the one that made it themselves. So just one person made one Riverdale meme.
But it's funny, though. It's funny. Great.
And it's like, I like that it doesn't give too much context.
Yes, that if you don't know the show, you have to like think about like, what does that mean, jingle jangle dealer?
I personally have submitted a recommendation for an American Girl doll who did something, and it hasn't been made yet, but if anyone out there is good with Photoshop, we do need an American Girl doll who is Josh Sappy's muse when he made Uncut Gems.
That is absolutely correct. We need that. That's so funny.
I don't want Uncut Gems to ever die.
Yeah, that's such a good meme. Well, that's your Riverdale fan news for the week. Let's get into this episode, American Psychos. Kate, what'd you think of this one?
So it was the musical episode.
Yeah.
What I will say is that it felt like less of a musical episode than they have in the past.
Thank God.
Like it did. I think there were only like three songs.
That's correct.
Which is less than some non-musical episodes have.
Or four songs, I believe.
Four.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how many. I guess four. But yeah, but that's still like less than most of the non-musical episodes.
Totally.
And like, they didn't feel hammered in. Like, three of them were fully performed like on stage, acknowledged as American Psycho performances.
Yes, they were diegetic.
Yes, they were diegetic.
As we like to say, yes.
Yeah, and then one non-diegetic, which was also a very weird song that I did not enjoy. It was very upbeat and was just, I haven't seen the musical and I don't like Duncan Sheik, but it didn't need to exist.
Well, you know, I did want to wait to talk about this, but I really do want to spend a lot of time on this podcast today talking about how there's just not enough songs about dresses.
About very specific designers, but only the ones that rhyme.
Only the rhyming designers.
What did Duncan Sheik do besides this in Spring Awakening?
Spring Awakening.
I just said Spring Awakening.
I'm sorry.
I feel like he had like a song.
He does. He wrote and sang the song Barely Breathing from the 90s.
Okay. Yeah. I knew it was like a 90s one.
Yes. And I like a lot about Spring Awakening. Mm-hmm. And I did not see the American Psycho musical, which did not do particularly well on Broadway. And quite frankly, I thought all the songs that were from the American Psycho musical were absolutely neither here nor there. Oh, also, I didn't bother to look it up because I don't really care, but the Union song may have also been from that musical. So that's another musical number I'm forgetting.
Honestly, let's look it up because I forgot that happened, because also I was like, there's no way this isn't just like a like American folk song.
Sure.
Like, I just don't care for Spring Awakening. I think Spring Awakening came out at a time where I was supposed to really love it, and I knew the people who did, because I was like in high school when it came out, which is like exactly when you're supposed to love it.
Yep.
And I didn't much care for it. And then it just got like, unfortunately, I was in the drama club when Spring Awakening came out. So as you can imagine, it there was just a lot of it in my life.
I saw Spring Awakening. My friend Heidi took me to see it for my birthday, which was so lovely. And she got us tickets where we sat on the stage. Mm-hmm. And that was a really interesting theater experience. And there was a lot about that show that I liked. One of the main things I really liked about it is that I got a really great view of Jonathan Groff's cute little butt because of where I was sitting on the mm-hmm. stage. So that was pretty exciting. I think a lot about that show is really well written and really interesting. And then I think that there's some stuff that feels a little less developed and kind of crummy, including the gay love story in it mm-hmm. is kind of rough for me. So yeah, I like a lot about Spring Awakening, but I certainly don't love Spring Awakening.
Yeah, I do like that it gave us not Lea Michele, but the ongoing rumor that she is illiterate.
Yes. It's,
like, I shouldn't laugh, like illiteracy like is a very serious thing, but there's no reason for her to be illiterate other than like stubbornness and like lack of education she could have had.
Certainly.
So, but it did give us, you know, Jonathan Groff and John Gallagher Jr. And,
yeah, everybody loves those guys.
People, bunch of people that we don't care for, but are famous.
That's true. Anyway.
Okay, so anyway, the Union song, it doesn't look like the Union song is in there. It looks like they do Hip to Be Square and In the Air Tonight, but otherwise. Not Sussudio.
No, but I don't believe that Sussudio has a lot to do with American Psycho. But Hip to Be Square is really big for him, and I believe that In the Air Tonight is as well.
Sussudio was way bigger than In the Air Tonight.
Oh, and no, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry.
And it feels like In the Air Tonight would be way more expensive for them to get than Sussudio. So I don't know why they went with In the Air Tonight, other than just trying to get people to care.
Oh my gosh. So that's our research on this American Psycho musical that we need to do. But it's so funny. So like, let's get into it. So we're going to see the serial killer convention, which already right. is like, makes me mad.
Well, but people are real excited to come because it is taking place in what is specifically called Murder Capital of Small Town USA.
Yeah, which is true at this point for Riverdale. Absolutely. Yeah,
I'm glad they acknowledged it, you know?
And something that is absolutely infuriating to me in this episode immediately is that Charles is just, like, their friend now.
He's just their friend, and he's also, actually within this first scene, the absolute voice of the audience, and then it goes away. Because later in this scene, there's a lot going on in this scene, but later in the scene, we'll jump ahead, Veronica says that Kevin will be performing from the Holy Grail of serial killer musicals. Louis Committee.
No, I mean, this was the funniest part of the episode, and at least they acknowledged this. They were like the Holy Grail of serial killer musicals, and Charles was like, Sweeney Todd! And then they were like, oh, no. American Psycho. And then everybody has to just go with it.
It feels like years ago, I was doing a movie cram. And it was, the plot was that whoever, like, they found an expiration on the back of the Constitution. And whoever currently lived in Thomas Jefferson's old apartment had to write a new Constitution. And we worked on this thing for hours and hours of me really quietly in the corner being like, guys, it's James Madison. Like, James Madison was the father of the Constitution. And I was ignored for so long. And then right before they started filming, someone added the line, like, shouldn't this be James Madison? And then that was it. But it was like the pinnacle of the movie was someone just like, wait a minute, and then moved on. And that's what feels like it was here, was everyone was all in. And there was like one writer's assistant that was like, why isn't this Sweeney Todd?
Yeah. And they had to acknowledge it.
They're finally like, shit, like, you should have said that a little louder because you're very right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because I was just thinking back in terms of TV to the Office episode where the amateur theater group is doing Sweeney Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm like, maybe the rights are too hard to get, but I feel like they could have gotten the rights to do Sweeney Todd for Riverdale.
I feel like Sweeney Todd is brought up in so many things, and that Patti LuPone like sunk the last production of it.
Mm-hmm.
That like it can't be more expensive than American Psycho.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing American Psycho is cheaper.
I guess it's the musical, because the movie, I don't really care about the movie either, but
yeah, the movie was popular when it came out, which was 20 years ago.
The book, don't care about either, but
yeah, it's all kind of, it's all kind of boring, like white guy stuff.
Yeah, I guess it probably is cheaper than Sweeney Todd, but I don't know that Sweeney Todd's that expensive compared to what else have they done? Heather's, Hedwig.
Hedwig, Next to Normal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Carrie.
Carrie was the one I was like, it's not Heather's that I'm thinking of, but
mm-hmm.
Carrie, yeah.
So
Next to Normal's the only one well regarded out of everything we just listed. Oh, Hedwig.
Oh yeah, Hedwig's very well rightfully celebrated because it's like an actually good thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, so Charles is like an official consultant on this.
Yes, Charles is an official consultant on this. And then we learn that, you know, there's just going to be wonderful events for the serial killer fans. Dr. Oh,
which
Kirtle,
event would you go to? Which event would you go to?
Probably the dismemberment, the Dr. Kirtle event.
The Dr. Kirtle, I believe the term was... simulated autopsy.
Mm-hmm. The Dr. Kirtle simulated autopsy. The talk with Drake sounds fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Betty is set up to be baby Jessica.
Yes, Betty is set up to be Betty's set up to be baby Jessica. I don't think I'd go to the Kevin stuff.
No, nope.
I think I'd be like, I don't know. But the people that go to the convention sure seem to really love it. So that's great.
Yeah, like right away, they were very sold on a lot of things that I questioned.
Well, I think that, you know, there's a giant crossover between the fans of serial killers and the fans of modern American musical theater. Like, that's just so obvious.
It honestly a little bit feels that way based on how well, like, serial killer like documentaries, like their target audience is like young women.
That is true.
But I will, like, there's that, and then there's another thing later where like the audience is so sold and I'm like, I'd be in the audience like, no way. We'll get there though.
Yeah, the audience loved it. Yeah. So the next thing that I want to address is that, you know, the only shot we see of Jughead in this episode is he's like locked in the bunker, and he like, and they're like, Jughead's strong, he'll get through this, but I mean, this is really quite torturesome. And then we leave him.
I will say that the subtitles called, when Archie said Jug, the subtitles put Chuck.
And yes, I was like, they did put Chuck, and it really threw me off for a moment.
It threw me off for like a hot second.
I was like, wait, is Chuck Clayton? What's happening?
Good for whoever did that. Like, good for whoever was like, I'm not doing any research about this. I'm just typing up exactly what I hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that scene also heavily featured Smart Food.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even notice that.
Oh my god, it was like,
I was too busy taking notes.
Tabitha was eating it, and it was like very weirdly situated on the kitchen island. It was the only thing on the kitchen island, and like propped up so it was facing out, so you saw it said Smart Food.
Smart Food, Smart Food, Smart Food.
Which, by the way, is a product I feel like has really cornered the market on like bagged popcorn in a way that I don't think it needs advertising.
That is true. People love their Smart Food. That is a really,
and it's my whole life. Like every party I've gone to, like their Smart Food.
Yep, their Smart Food.
Like, there's no debate. Like, it's like water at kid parties.
Yes.
Like, it's going to be there.
Yep. The smart food's going to be there.
That and is what other true. What other popcorn comes in a bag like that?
Well, Boom Chicka Pop does, but that
now,
is...
Now, yes. And it's not quite popcorn, and it, you know...
Yeah, it's a different thing.
Yeah. No, smart food doesn't need it.
So... Then Tony goes to tell Cheryl the news.
Before this, I want to go back to a scene.
Please.
We do have Frank talking to Percival.
Yes.
About Bailey's Comet.
Yes.
And also, what's interesting here is that it seems like Frank isn't being mind controlled, but he's like all in on it.
I am really glad you are bringing this up. Yes. That I did find that rather confusing. Like, is Frank being mind controlled, or now is he just super into, you know, Percival's plan and everything that Percival's doing?
Because he knows Percival is doing mind control, because at one point Percival's like, oh, they're forming the union, and Frank's like, why don't you just mind control them?
Yes.
So like, Frank is like on board with this at in some level of him. So what?
I'm not at liberty to say, because it just seemed really, 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 really sloppy. And then we have this scene where Cheryl is mad because she hasn't been with Tony for like about 10 years now or longer.
Yeah. And
but
she
Tony has decided to have, yes, absolutely. She's things are going pretty well with Heather in a way that was going to get to this later as well, but feels, oddly chaste, but okay, you know, if that's the way they want the relationship to progress, I respect it. But yeah, this makes Cheryl really mad. And then, you know, we see this scene with this musical number at SlaughterCon, where I am going to say some great costume and art direction here.
I noticed the same.
Really wonderfully kind of surreal, yeah. And strange, right?
Yeah, and it definitely, like, the cosplay was, like, for real horror movies without being, like, really specifically called out, too. Like, it was nice.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, also, it did feel a little like these were a group of people that were dressed like real serial killers from the Riverdale world. So, like, this is a world where there are a lot of masked, sort of outlandish serial killers, which I guess would make sense for Riverdale, so...
But there was also in there, like, there was a Michael Myers in there. There was... I can't remember if it's, like,
Happy Death Day. Yeah, like, there was, like, an off... I remember like, seeing, like, an off-brand Jigsaw, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
like, all, like, sort of slightly altered versions of, like, horror movie characters they didn't actually get the rights to, basically.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. And then we had this dude who is nuts, who was going to come after Betty with a knife, but then it really just turned out that it was the Black Hood's knife, and he wanted Betty to autograph it, and he bought it on Eastlay, which is a very funny name.
And I wonder, and I'll never not wonder, is this just where they were just like, we can't say eBay, let's come up with something? Or were they like, we should make this a marketplace for murder things? Or were they like, we can't do eBay, let's make it funny and like, I just don't know why they would eSlay, but like, they're all okay reasons.
I know. It was this was one of the puns that worked for me really well because it worked on two different levels. So that was kind of cool. Yeah, I agree with that. So that was our opening. And then, you know, when we come back.
Wait, I do want to go back real fast.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. Listen, I feel like my notes were a little more slapdash than yours this time, which is a rarity, so I appreciate it.
Mine do fall apart.
Sure.
But the guy who wanted Betty to sign the knife also wanted Betty to use it on him, and he wanted to be Betty's first official kill.
Yes.
Which is, like, definitely a thing that's, like, out there and happening that was, like, really fucking creepy.
Very creepy. Yep. Very, very, very creepy. And Betty had every right to feel violated and creeped out. So then Percival, you know, basically uses his mind control powers to get all of those guys to go back to work, which seems to be quite taxing on Percival, which is interesting. Like, Percival seems to be much more powerful one-on-one than he is with a bunch of other people.
Yeah, and what I did notice is that Fang spent a lot of last episode explaining that baby Anthony would be his tether, and then he didn't even try that to not fold.
I know.
He immediately was like, you got a dude, and like walked on out of the diner.
Yeah, maybe this will come up in court. Maybe he won't care about baby. Maybe they'll be like, well, you didn't even use baby Anthony's your tether, so you must not really love him when the custody battle's going on.
Yeah. Later in the episode, they do call out again that, like, he plans on using baby Anthony as his tether. And it's like, he's not trying very hard.
And it's like, well, too little too late, actually. No, absolutely. Made very little sense. And, you know, then we started getting the hints that Drake was attracted to Betty. And we'll get to it.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. But, you know, they really did lay it down, which is okay.
Yeah, she's giving her little presentation on hybristophilia, which is your attraction to murder. And here I am, like, doesn't seem like she's done a lick of original research. Like, what authority does she have giving this lecture?
It did seem like she was reading it off of eBay. Absolutely. E-slay. But she is eSlay, yes. Or reading it off of Wikipedia, or whatever it's called in Riverpedia, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So then, you know, it's revealed later on why Cheryl is so angry about this marriage happening, but it
is it?
I mean, you know, it's just like, I was jealous. Yeah. And then we learn that Archie's going to try to break up this work site and the mind control with the power of music. Which is nice, because it's the plot of the musical I wrote about the characters. So that's fine. But it's also like...
It's also like...
So funny.
When Tabitha was like, use song, I was like, she's not wrong that like music and song has been integral to many labor movements.
Certainly.
I just don't need it.
But this is also... This season is like... Labor Movements 101 for teenagers. So, like, that's okay to talk about. It's fine, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, they're all unionizing their Starbuckses. Good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I hope that keeps happening, of course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then
the scene where Kevin and Cheryl do the spell that Kevin memorized extraordinarily quickly.
Well, he is an actor.
He's an actor. And yes. Cheryl, though, did not have it memorized.
Yes, but Kevin knew it right
but
away.
Kevin did. Yep.
And also, like, you know, here we are seeing Kevin and Cheryl back together. A little pair we've seen in the past. But if I remember correctly, they kind of are on bad terms with each other.
I feel like everyone's on bad terms with Kevin.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm just projecting because I'm so mad at Kevin right now on the show.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that anyone likes Kevin except for Moose, who's like questionable and not in this episode.
Yes, which is a real strike against it.
Yeah.
But then Archie's beautiful music snaps everyone out of their mind control and they go back to be with their families. It's very nice.
Now, here's the thing. So the families are there because they talk about how the families are like these guys' tethers, like how baby Anthony was supposed to work. And I get that. But what I feel is insane is that like, all these like women and children were like, oh yeah, they are being mind controlled. Like, thank you for helping them get out of this. Like, there was no like, what's going on? They were just like, they are. Yeah. Mind control. Say no more.
Well, I kind of closed some gaps there, which may be some actual plot holes that are sort of just about the fact that they were all striking, and they probably all had conversations with their partners about how passionate they were about the strike. And then they all went back to work together probably without talking to their partners. So their partners were probably all like, yeah, I think something is up here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. But I also think Verdale was just like, no, they're good.
Yeah,
no,
totally. No. Absolutely. Absolutely. So then we have, I think, a pretty interesting scene for the show to have, where we have Drake admitting to Betty that she is attracted to her, in a way that is very mature and forthcoming and feels like a healthy amount of communication. And Betty's reaction felt very much drawn from Lily Reinhart's own experience. And I did not mind any of this. I thought this was all okay, actually.
I felt it was extraordinarily inappropriate for a coworker.
It isn't really inappropriate for a coworker because I don't believe that Betty is Drake's supervisor. I believe they are on the same level. That's, you know, and coworkers are allowed to date each other. That is totally okay.
I agree.
Just Drake, not allowed to harass each other if one of them says no, you know.
Drake, I felt, started to get a little pushy, though.
Do you think so? I didn't feel like, there was Betty a pushiness.
Like, when Betty was like, this is very flattering, but I am with Archie, Drake was like, well, but like, I don't know. I thought maybe you were a little more progressive than that, Betty. Like,
I interpreted that differently.
Okay.
I thought it was CW speak for, without wanting to say it because of the age of the audience. Oh, okay. I'm asking because I thought maybe you and Archie were in an open relationship. Because she was like, you know, are you guys exclusive? Like, you know, she did ask that flat out. Mm-hmm. And then when she says, I thought you guys were maybe a little more progressive, I'm guessing that she is putting out the feelers to see if Betty, is open with Archie, you know, relationship wise. That's sort of what I thought. Yeah.
I guess I've just been like, it hasn't happened to me, knock on wood, but I've been in a woman in an office long enough that, like, once Betty was like, no, I'm with Archie and it's exclusive, like, that's where it needs to end.
That is so fair. Absolutely. Of course.
Like, I get that, like, if she was, like, a friend or, like, out and about or, like, from some other extracurricular, but, like, being a coworker going beyond the no is not.
It's good. Really inappropriate. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it is a same-sex relationship, and also it's the CW, which like does add a little bit more complicating factors, but like from an HR standpoint, no thank you.
Yeah, totally. You know, that definitely, like, that is really great to remember, is that if you are on the CW and someone harasses you at work, you are allowed to say to them, hey, I said no and we're on the CW.
You so, say that out loud.
Yeah, that's what you say out loud. So stop it.
That works even if you're not on the CW. Just remind people that, like, you may be on the CW.
Yeah. We're on the CW. But then Betty has a dream about Drake, which is sort of interesting. And it seems like Betty is really considering what is going on, and she's beginning to feel torn between Drake and Archie. And there is no moment, and I kind of like this, where Betty's like, it's a woman, oh my god. She's just kind of like, oh.
It's not Archie.
Yeah, and I kind of like that. I kind of like that it's just like, okay, I guess Betty has decided that she is queer, you know? And that it's sort of a quiet decision that feels like it's kind of flavoring the character in a really nice way.
Or that she did have that question, but it already happened. And she's like, come to terms with that. And it's just like been with Archie though. Cause like,
yes. And it certainly could have happened over the time jump for sure. But like
in college.
Exactly. Yeah. Like over the time
a
jump,
woman, like, a young woman in college. Yeah.
Certainly. But of course it has not been mentioned until it's advantageous to the writers. You know what I mean? Instead of just making it more part of her character and her identity.
It would be weird to bring up out of nowhere a lot of the time, but like,
well, yeah, but there could have been examples of her being like, oh yeah, you know, she could have been like, oh yeah, you know, when I was with Mary in college, and then just like treat it like any other relationship she had, like at some point during the last few seasons of the show. That's all I'm saying.
She hadn't talked about like any other relationship, is my, but but yeah. Yeah,
only with the creep. Fake.
Oh, right. Yeah, fake, knock off Adam Driver.
Yeah, knock off Adam Driver. That's the only one. Totally.
Right.
That's all. Yeah. So, like, we know that there has been some romance in her life, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that guy.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
So, then, baby Anthony has colic. And this is flashes back to Rivervale when baby Anthony has colic. And then both Cheryl and Kevin get really guilty feeling they did this spell because they didn't know that it would affect baby Anthony. And then Kevin apparently, like, actually cares about baby Anthony.
Well, he does care. He's been fighting for custody of baby Anthony this whole time.
I know, but it feels like it's just a way to be mean to Tony and Fangs more than it has anything to do with baby Anthony.
Is that, like, part of me doesn't want to make fun of Fangs because, like, he's a first-time father and it's so stressful. But when he's also, like, he's never run a fever before. He's never been like it. It's like, yeah, man, that's, like, the deal with fevers is that, like, they're not like, a regular thing.
Sure.
And, like, this is a baby. So, like, it not the being, like, this baby's never kicked a soccer ball before. Like, yeah, man, like, that's just, like, how linear time is.
Yes. yes. Yeah. That's a really good point.
Like,
yeah.
They're just, and I'm like, yeah, man, like, being like, you know, he's never had colic. I don't know how to deal with this. Like, he's a fever. We're not sure what's going on. But to just be like, he's never had a fever before. It's like, yeah, man.
Yeah, like, it's a lot of babies. There's going to be a lot of firsts. Yeah, totally.
He hasn't done a lot of things yet. So.
And then we have this Betty and Veronica conversation.
Uh-huh.
Which feels really healthy to me.
It did. And then it took a real turn.
I know, and that was such a shame because
I wrote sound advice and then oh no, bad.
Yeah, it's such a rarity that we get the two of them in a scene alone, and it's just a kind of about their dynamic. And you know, Betty and Veronica are a very special pair, both in Riverdale and just sort of in the world of pop culture in general. You know, there's a specialness, there's an iconicness. So when you see them together, you love to see it. And then Veronica really steps out of her bounds and goes and gives Drake a little talking to, which feels a little homophobic. Don't love it.
Yeah, like it opens with her being like to Betty, like, I think you need to talk about your feelings with Archie, which is like the only advice that should be given.
And
is like
very good advice. Yeah,
like the best advice possible is just talk to your partner, and that's what she did. And then yeah, she goes and like confronts Drake and is
about
like,
what did Drake like shared her feelings? That's an okay thing to do.
Yeah. And then like eventually like Drake did step back. She didn't keep pushing after that initial like slight push.
That's
like,
right.
It feels like, and then like Veronica, and then what was weird too is that like Veronica gave her this talking to, and like Drake wasn't mad or confused. She just like took it and then like walked away.
Yes, Drake is apparently like the patron saint of like perfect lesbians, right?
Like, it was
holy
what?
Shit.
Like she could have like, I feel like a perp, like even like just like totally like absorbing it would still be like a little confused, like why is this happening?
Or and so, also like it's hard to hear. This is difficult. That's difficult. And she was just like, yes, now if you'll excuse me.
Like, yeah.
That was wild and very weird. And then, you know, the next time we see Drake and Veronica interacting, they're doing a musical number about dresses.
They're besties.
They
Veronica
are
helped her get close. Yeah, it's so bizarre.
Yes.
I want to say we see baby Anthony's crib, which has a, like a little baby snake on it.
Mm-hmm. Very
and
cute.
And I just want to talk about the cute baby snake.
Yeah, cute baby snake. And then also it is revealed. Okay, I had a question about this. Heather then says that she is a night nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I'm wondering is Heather also a night nurse? Or do they don't want to share that Heather is a witch and it's a witch potion she used, you know, on baby Anthony?
I was wondering too, because she said she was like a like certified, what'd you say, midwife? Which is like absolutely a thing. And seems like a really big lie to share if it's not true, considering it like wasn't really relevant. In the
I was thinking that too. Yes. It so, was very then, like, weird to me.
I feel like if you're like a certified midwife, it's probably like not that hard to get like a night nurse job.
Sure.
But like it also like she does She's a librarian, which is actually an incredible difficult job to get.
Yeah, you need a master's.
You need a master's, and there's like still like a shortage of positions. There's too many librarians out there. So
yep.
like why she doesn't need this like extra thing unless she just like really wants to do it, which is what the midwifery thing is. But like the night nurse thing is like, that's not a cushy job. Like you wouldn't do that unless you needed to.
Yeah.
Midwife, sure. Night nurse, no way.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's she has a lot of jobs, apparently.
Yeah.
She's one of those characters that apparently has just a lot of different jobs.
Yeah.
And then we get to go to this convention where Alice is interviewing Betty. So when Betty isn't just screaming at Alice and trying to take the twins away from her and just being terrible, they're having a perfectly nice professional conversation in front of a lot of people. That's a little interview.
Yeah. I'll say I feel like Alice maybe is the most qualified for this job in the town, but also just feels like maybe you could have found someone else and caught them up real quick.
I think it would really benefit the show, and this is something I'm thinking out loud about now, and I know it won't happen now that the show is self-canceling, and but there could have been another character they introduced who is like a nosy journalist type character, and it would have been really helpful to differentiate that character from Alice.
Yeah, or they could have just gotten Pert Hapley.
Who?
Pert Hapley from Parks and Rec.
Oh, great.
Who, that actor only plays newscasters. Like, if you go to IMDb, like, that's his whole job.
It's yeah, like, great. I'm sure there's a reporter character of some sort in Archie comics they could have drawn
from.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know? So anyway.
They get a phone call, because apparently they're taking phone calls.
So this part... I was like, am I watching a dream? What's happening at this point on the show?
Earlier, when I talked about how the audience was just in on things without questions, this was the big one.
This was bananas.
So, like, they get a call, and first of all, there's, like, insane heavy breathing, and they're just like, okay, this is a normal caller.
Actually, they're like, hi! And also,
yeah.
Just before even the call, they just had, like, an old, like, 1960s push-button phone with the speaker. It was so strange.
It was so strange. And as someone who watches basically 15 hours of a call-in show every week, if someone called in heavy breathing like that on this sports show with all men, they'd be like, oh, no, 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 and hang up.
Well, like, also, there was just no one vetting the calls. Like,
yeah, like, no one's gonna, and then, like, so it turns out, like, this is, you know, this is the TBK calling in. And the whole audience is like, all right, no notes. Like, no one's like, oh, it seems like maybe they set this up for the drama because they're on stage and we're the audience. And mm-hmm. That's generally how a theater transaction works.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like, oh, this is real. Yep. And I know personally that I would be in the audience, like, at least on Twitter, like, hey, guys, like, what? Like, surely this is, like, I just want to, like, double check this is made up. Like, I don't want to come out and be like, totally believe it, because then I'll look like a gullible idiot, because this is clearly made up.
Yeah, totally.
But they're just, yep, they're all cool with it.
And then they have a little chat ski on stage. And I believe this is when TBK says that the only way that this is going to end is with them having a kiss in the dark.
Ooh.
Which actually might be kind of a nice ending. You know, maybe it's just a little peck. I don't know.
It feels like, I think they've done this before, the all be gone in the dark that the Golden State Killer used to say.
Mm-hmm. That's
which
true.
Which is creepy and real, and he is in jail because that dumb idiot did 23andMe.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens.
Yep, don't do 23andMe if you've murdered.
If you murdered a bunch of people, don't do a DNA test. So then we learn why Cheryl is sad about Tony. Mm-hmm. She has a little chat about it with Heather, and this also feels kind of nice. And, you know, Cheryl says, I always thought I'd end up with Tony, but then you and your wig walked back into my life, and you and your wig and glasses that you got from the Halloween store.
What's interesting is she doesn't explain that the wig actually did walk in separately, like Cousin It.
Which, like, it did do.
It
and it
do.
Was wearing the glasses.
It was, and that's how we knew that it wasn't just a wig and that there was a person under there, like Cousin It.
That's right. And then so, we learned, and then we met Heather.
And then we met Heather. They were two separate things.
So then Cheryl invites Heather to this bachelorette party.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see who's there. And it's a weird group of characters from the show who don't do a lot of things together and some of whom don't know Tony, like Drake.
Mm-hmm. But it seems to me like it is a small town where there are so few people that you just have to be friends with. Like, it's like when you're in elementary school and your friends were just the people that lived in your neighborhood. Like, there wasn't like a big choice. It was just like who was there.
Sure. Yeah,
it
absolutely.
It feels like that's what it is. They were like, oh, are you under 30? Great, get in here.
Now, was Tabitha there?
Yes, she was.
Okay. All right. Oh, I will allow for who was in this musical number.
This musical number that was insane.
It was absolutely bonkers, and also started, let's not forget, with the fact that Katie Keene, a character that at this point no one gives any shits about at all, was name dropped as having flown the dresses in from New York. Like, well, the major thing that we'd be asking ourselves on Riverdale is, how did these women get these dresses?
Now,
flew them in.
Do you remember where Katie Keene got them herself?
Yes, she got them from Lacey's.
Lacey's.
Which I believe is the store where Katie Keene works.
Mm-hmm.
The Macy's fake equivalent. But it is so, I mean, that show lasted for one season several years ago and was quite unsuccessful.
Yep.
However,
they're
doubling down. This is an important part of our universe. Katie Keene, you know what show was way more successful and they don't address as much at all in more of like a connective way?
Chilling Adventures of Sabrina?
Yeah! like, you know, Heather's from Greendale and like, and she says, you know, you Riverdale girls really put us Greendale girls to shame. She says that in the episode. And it's like, it's nice to remember that sort of those characters are existing across the river, you know, like that's fine. But good God, all the Katie Keene stuff, it's like, wowie zowie.
Now here's what I will say about this song.
Yes, let's get into it.
The choreography was mostly meh, and then there's like several moments where the entire choreography is beats of them just switching which purse their shoulder is on with like a lot of attitude, and yes. I love that.
I also just want to point out with the choreography, I'm such a big fan of when you make an angle with your elbow, so I really enjoyed the choreography, and I'm joking, and also I gotta say I've seen several Broadway shows, some of which are like very, very, very popular, where quote unquote modern choreography consists of very angular arms, and I think it is quite silly. Just wanted to say.
Yeah. I do like that. I truly cannot express how much I liked an 8 count of switching a purse from one shoulder to the other.
Oh yes, I don't want to gloss over that, Kate. It's worth it, because yes, that is real dancing when you switch your purse.
With some sass and attitude.
Yes.
Yes.
And then TBK, TBK is in the crowd,
mm-hmm.
and Betty spots him. And so TBK has been dragged into this absolutely awful musical number. And then it turns out for no reason at all, and it makes no sense to anything, that there's a fake TBK who's putting a bag on Kevin's head, and it's part of Kevin's act, and he's very mad at Betty for ruining it.
Yeah, and that was Dr. Curdle's big musical moment.
It was Dr. Curdle's big musical moment, but also, like, that's not a nice thing to do to your friend, is have a replica of their captor in the show. So Kevin once again is being a real douche nozzle, quite frankly.
Also, what's wild is that Betty spots TBK and just like goes off and doesn't tell minimum Drake. Like,
yeah, totally.
Feels
yes.
Like this really could, he really could have been stopped if he went TBK.
I thought
like,
that too. I was like, stop everything and go after him, and then that doesn't happen. And then later she's like, well, we were too far away. Which is, you know, spoken like a true cop. He was three steps away, so we had to let him go, you know, certainly.
There were cameras on the subway.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Ask questions.
There were no cameras on the subway. Don't ask questions. Exactly. Yes. And then we had this nice scene, which I liked, where Cheryl and Heather, she shows them this nice painting, which is like a really nice way to express these feelings, these youthful feelings, you know. Mm-hmm. And then,
while still kind of being from The Shining.
Yes, and certainly the way they relate to each other is somewhat creepy. And then she, like, leans into Cheryl and, like, gives her a kiss, like, at the end. And it's very cartoony and very silly and not the way it felt earlier on in the show when it was Cheryl and Tony, which felt mm-hmm. more just like a normal way people express love for each other.
Yeah.
But okay, you know, oh well.
So they start talking about this plan to get TBK to come using Betty as bait on stage instead of Kevin.
So
here's
stupid.
The thing. So many things wrong. So first of all, he knows Betty's there. She doesn't have to get on stage. Doesn't need to do that. And then they're like, well, we're going to just lock all the doors behind him as though that's not extraordinarily dangerous for so many reasons beyond
so many
being
reasons.
Trapped in a room. Like,
and also, like, doesn't come back, which is fine, I guess, but I mean, it feels like they're setting it up that TBK is in the room, and then he starts killing people, and then no one can get out, which would be really scary, right?
Yeah, and or he could just, like, set a fire and they can't get out.
I was thinking that too.
Or it is
like Carrie style.
Kidnapping.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, kidnapping legally if you don't let people leave once you let them in. Because that's.
Yes, because you need to have the ability for an exit. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Did you see that new Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Netflix?
I did not. I chose not to watch it when the reviews started coming in. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yes.
But they're on, just a little spoiler because he lives. They're all, like, on a party bus, and they just can't get out because it's a narrow aisle, and there's a man with a chainsaw.
Yes,
so,
sure.
Like, everyone just gets, like, kind of slaughtered because there's no way out.
Just as a little bit of a tangent, there's some horror movie franchises that should have only been one movie.
Oh, yeah.
And Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of them, and Halloween is one of them as well. I
yeah.
said it. It's official. I said it on the podcast. Let's move on.
Great.
So then, you know, we get another scene where Betty is being so down on herself for, like, having a real fucked up family situation, mm-hmm. basically. And then Ronnie flat out says, I've killed more people than you have, you know?
Which is so fucking funny.
And is true!
Yeah.
And, like, Ronnie's like, I'm okay. This is being a woman in this sort of in the situations I've been in, I've had to do it. Ronnie is fine.
And Ronnie's fully, like, two of them were on purpose. Like,
yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely premeditated. She was like, they're gonna die. This is it for them. Yeah, absolutely. And, like, so, and then she says a line which is a very good Riverdale line. She says, we're all dark in Riverdale. Yeah, which is kind of the crux of the show, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're all dark. You know, this is the dark version of Archie. Dark. But, and then this little psycho boy comes back, you know, with Black Hood's.
It's the same one, right?
Yeah, it's the same guy.
Why didn't they just throw him out of the conference the first time?
I know.
Time?
He's just allowed to run around and be awful. But then Betty, she's like, done with this, and Drake's gonna handle it because Betty's like, excuse me, I have a show to prepare for my performance, Betty the Grand Thespian. Like,
yeah, and to be clear, just to get to explain it, the kid now has the Black Hood's gun.
Yes, the kid now has the Black Hood's gun, but the way that she sort of was like, I don't want to deal with this now, I thought was so funny. So funny. So.
Yep.
Then we have the act break, and then we go back, and it seems like we've missed a lot of plot
I rebound.
And I was like, and I was watching it on the CW app, and I was like, did they miss a fucking act of this by mistake?
I was like, did it skip through a commercial because I paused it for a second? Did it skip? Or like, oh yeah, no, this was very insane.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, well, maybe Louis will tell me. So.
Totally. I was like, I mean, well, hopefully Kate saw it. Yep.
It did end up making sense. Like, they did end up flashing back, but like, very poorly set up.
Yeah, it wasn't well set up. And, you know, this is a comic book trope that really bothers me that a lot of writers use, where they'll start with a giant action scene and then they'll be like 10 hours earlier. Yeah. And I felt the same way about this, that it was like a time jump for no good reason. So
I also, though, was like, oh, maybe then we don't have to watch a whole song.
Yes, but we did.
We did.
And then we learn that the trash bag killer has decided to like really set himself up for murder by sort of having this final confrontation in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And he kills the FBI person, but he's...
Who's just like there?
Who's just there, yeah. But he spares Alice and Charles, but we don't really know why.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. I mean, I would imagine if he really wants to get to Betty, he would kill them, but okay.
I think maybe, though, because he wanted to, like, kind of be with Betty, his thinking was, like, if I kill them, she's just gonna, like, straight up kill me.
Yeah, or maybe he was hoping that they would kill them together. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he's prepared this lovely dinner for her,
mm-hmm.
which looks like a normal dinner. Like, it's not a dinner of body parts or anything, right?
No, it didn't look like it. It was certainly a meat, but I think it was a non-human meat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't a recreation of that funny scene from Rocky Horror where they're all eating, you know, meatloaf / Eddie. Yeah.
It did look like, maybe that I'm thinking about it, lamb chops. And like, since this is so like Silence of the Lamby.
Sure. That it was lamb chops. Sure.
That they like really leaned into it a little too
Yeah,
hard.
They leaned into it. And then Betty uses the term grooming again, which I am not into.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. And then, really to the surprise of no one, she shoots TBK in the face, which is it's the right move, I would say.
The whole time I was like, just shoot him. Like,
shoot this guy. Indiana Jones this dude. Like,
it's like Muldoon at the beginning of Jurassic Park yelling, shoot her. Like, just fucking do it. Like, I know that, like, I guess you want to, like, get confessions out of him or whatever, but, like, disarm him in a minimum and then call someone, because by the way, she never calls anyone.
Yeah. So she did it. She killed him.
And
apparently.
Then she's like, yeah, she's like, I'm so sure he's dead. And I thought that this was going to be, because we've already seen him Michael Myers once before. I assumed they were going to go back and he was going to be gone, but he is dead.
It looks like it. Looks like he's bleeding out on the ground, which is mm-hmm. fine. And then Percival says he's going to enact some biblical vengeance.
Yep.
So if it doesn't rain frogs in the next Riverdale episode, I'm going to be really disappointed.
He said old school biblical defiance to bust the union, which is like, Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah,
also, like,
I know.
Frank is still like, you got it, dude.
Yeah, Frank loves it. Frank's so into it.
Yeah.
And then Betty, like, is sitting there with this conversation with Archie where, once again, like, if Archie's going to break up with her for any reason, it's that, gosh, she is such a fucking downer on herself. Oh, it's so tiresome at this point.
But also,
like give yourself a break, honey. Oh, my God. You're fine.
At the same time, like, she was explaining her fears to Archie, and I'm like, this is healthy. Like, this is...
That's fair. Totally. Absolutely. And then Archie responds in a super emotionally healthy way. He's like, no, I trust you. Which is right, absolutely. And I thought that was actually kind of a lovely scene between the two of them. And I liked the flashback to them saving the bird. However, yeah. I did think that the actors that they used this time around for the two of them looked real scary.
It was the same Betty.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the same. It looks like a different Archie, I
Yeah,
feel.
I feel like we just haven't seen young Archie as much as we've seen young Betty enough to like really make a decision.
Yeah, totally. But I thought it was creepy.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then they were in love, and that's the end of this episode.
Yep.
So yeah, so who's on your power list?
I have the trash bag killer for this one.
Yep.
Percival,
Yep.
Cheryl, and Veronica.
I have everybody that you had except for Veronica. Very good.
Okay.
And who was on your crush list? Very, this is a very sexy episode. It was not sexy. The dress song did not make it sexy. I'm sorry.
I have no one. Maybe Tabitha, Veronica, Dr. Curdle? All question marks.
I have Drake, Kevin in his outfit, Tony because she got to wear a nice dress for her bachelorette.
Great.
So what's coming up in 2 weeks here?
In 2 weeks is the episode.
I love a good epicode.
Big fan of the episode Biblical.
Oh, it's called Biblical.
Yeah, so
Okay.
then they can see why I got caught up on the hard k sound, but you know,
Well,
it's fine. It's fine. Just make fun of me. I get it.
if we don't get moose in a loincloth, I'll be very disappointed. This has been another episode of XOXO Riverdale. Special thanks to our editor, Anjali Mercado.
And our theme songwriter, Louis Aronowitz.
Once again, if you like what you are hearing, you should subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcatcher you use, and please reach out to us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Insta. We'd love to have some chats with you. I'm Louis Perlman.
I'm Kate Batter.
Bye.
Bye.